Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah, that's another version of Brothers Gonna Work It Out. That's Chuck and the Boys, Public Enemy. What's up? I had a little difficulty logging in and all that stuff, but we made it. I'm Citizen Payne. This is Kay's son and friends. I'm Kay's son, Eric Citizen Payne. Got the friends in the house. Byron Saunders, the legendary historian. Wayne Gilman, the legendary newsman. And this be the week. We're Thursday evening. Going live on a Thursday as opposed to a Wednesday. Wanted to watch the president's addressing of the Congress and watch the results thereafter, you know, the Republican response and all the other things. We also want to talk about the murder of Andrew Brown Jr. in North Carolina. If you've been listening to other episodes, you'll remember that I said that there is a directive that a number of racist white supremacists that have infiltrated law enforcement and the military are under. That is, whenever they get an opportunity, I believe, to kill a black person, they take it. And the issue that I just was watching on one of the shows here, the issue of qualified immunity was mentioned. And that is something that I think that if you can tackle that, you can probably begin to tackle these supremacists who are in the various aspects of our society that want to kill black people. I think it's been going on, you know, like I said before, like we all know, and Byron, obviously, of course, being the historian that he can tell you, he'll break it down in minute detail about how America was, in fact, a racist country, contrary to what the vice president said. And, of course, Tim Scott said last night. Understand why the vice president has to say that, but and you understand why Tim Scott has to say that for two totally different reasons, right? America has been a racist country. If it's not racist now, surely at one time it was. If the law of the day, the order of the day was slavery, clearly what? If the order of the day was Jim Crow, clearly America was racist at one time. What's the problem with saying it? That's the problem with having a racist white supremacist society. You say the truth that they don't want to hear, and oops. You know, you're anti-American, you're anti-whatever. And when they say that, that must mean, if you're really listening, that to be American is to be racist and a white supremacist, at least from the people's mouths who are saying that. So those are the couple of things that we're going to be discussing tonight. You know, the country is also opening back up a little bit, and Joe Biden appears to be ahead of schedule along those lines. And, you know, the other side, the Republicans and the white supremacists, that's what they are. I think, I'm going to be real honest. I think if you're a member of the Republican Party, if you support them now, then you support white supremacy, you support racism. You support what went on at the Capitol on January 6th. You know, it's plain and simple. If you're connected or down with a group and they believe in certain things, then that, you know, people are going to draw that conclusion. So get over it. If people put one and one together and call you two. Ha! Like that, how I did that there. Let's bring Byron in. I see he's on the line. He wants to make a couple of comments here. Brother Byron Saunders, the legendary historian. Byron, what's going on this evening, brother?
Good evening. It's quite an interesting time and period in our nation, of course, reckoning with racism and being racist, as you're right, since the very beginning when they landed. The entire concept began to take hold and ferment, and it was literally states and territories within what we call North America now that were created under different banners, different flags. But one commonality that was consistent throughout all of the colonies is that there was a white supremacy concept being fomented. Now, tracking it historically makes it very easy to identify that not only the history of racism in this country, but the periods when it was most cruel. And the byproducts of a civil war and a Reconstruction period and the rise of White Citizens Council and the KKK all at the same time, 1871, okay, 65 to 71, and then you begin to chart the systemic concept that we are prevailing in these times today in the 21st century. It just didn't happen yesterday. George Floyd is just another in a line of, you can talk every decade, every year, since 1619.
Hey, what do you think? I was going to say, but and I kind of know the answer, but every time we bring something up, you know, you bring up America's racist, you would say something like Black Lives Matter. And I guess I would answer my own question as opposed to why. And you could really identify who's who by the reaction that they have, right? You know, you mentioned Black Lives Matter, and certain people lost their mind, man. To see people really get incensed that black people would have the nerve to say that. It's unbelievable, right?
Yeah.
And it really shows, I guess, the level of hatred by their reaction to certain things. I'm talking about a reflexive reaction.
Yeah, because, see, when you talk about policy, statutes created to circumvent the rule of law, which in its simplicity, it says all men are created equal. But then you you start defining what is equal, and you say, oh, wait a minute, equal to what?
Mm-hmm.
You mean I got to have the same amount of money that he's got to have? Do I have to be treated the same way that I'm treated? You see, because it's not just about on a balance. You use the word equality, and then you begin to define what principles of equality are we respecting. Because in my book, that means everything. Equal justice, equal education, equal reparations. You know what I'm saying? Because it's not the word itself is defined rather succinctly, I would think.
You when you say equality?
So it is. Yeah, because it basically, I have to believe in the principle of it. Otherwise, what the hell am I doing here? Let me just pick up my stakes and leave this place.
Right.
But no, because we have invested quite a bit of blood, sweat, tears, and more than just a little bit in this land. And so you can't tell me to leave.
Right. You know, when you...
Before you.
Exactly. I mean, we that's an area where, you know, we have to give these people, we have to give these people education and enlightenment in doses and bits and pieces, because too much will make their head explode. And I understand the revelation or the resistance to, and the utter confusion an individual would have when they find out that everything they believed in, everything that they held dear, their whole world is not what they thought it was. Everything was a lie. You know, I mean, that's a hard thing.
Yeah.
That's a hard thing to
it
accept by individuals, to understand that everything was a lie. But with this particular scenario, because, you know, there's a lot of examples of that. You know, people have that in families and interpersonal relationships and all that stuff. But this particular example of white supremacy, you have to have at one point or another in life have bought into that concept, meaning at one point in life, if you have any type of humanity, if you saw someone being brutalized for no other reason than the person brutalizing that person could brutalize them, meaning that society accepted that as their right as a being, as a human being, and it was their right to brutalize this other person who they didn't even consider a human being. My question is, when does the empathy, when does your humanity kick in where you know innately this is not right? There is something wrong about this. And that's what I say. That's what I mean when I say you know, there's a certain amount of acquiescence that you, that takes to buy into that mentality, right? Because once you become an adult, like all children that grow up, their form of thinking, their mind is free thought. They're not limited by the parameters of the mentality and the schools of thought and the things that they've been brought up with. So they get exposed to the world. You know, that's why all of these people talk about their kids go to school and they become liberals, because they get exposed to the world and it broadens their thinking. So when in that, do you reject other concepts? Do you reject education and learning of other things and say, I'm going to ride with this racism. I'm going to reject all of the other stuff that the world says. I'm going to reject the innate empathy that I might feel as a human being and watch this person get their clothes stripped off and hung, and also on top of that watch them get burned alive, and also after that, as a souvenir, we will go and cut off pieces of their body. When do you buy into that? Is that a mass psychosis or what? That's my question.
Well,
obviously it's rhetorical.
No, it's not a rhetorical question, because 3 weeks ago, the CDC confirmed that racism is a sickness, a virus. It's a sickness. It's a pathological sickness. And it, once we begin to identify it as a schism in the brain, which makes you want to hate something so bad to be that brutal. You see, because that's born of some kind of, I think, a psychosis to want to sit and make a picnic out of it. I mean, that's not just brutal and bizarre behavior. I think that's a pathological sickness that goes way beyond something that really needs some intervention.
Yeah.
And it's compounded. It is really compounded when you put a weapon into that hand of that person.
Yeah. And anytime you have, if anybody that has been around a scenario at a concert or any type of scenario where people start panicking, something happens, and the individuals involved in the ruckus are doing one thing, and then everybody else reacts. Either the crowd runs away because anything could happen, someone could pull out a gun, or a fight is happening, yada, yada. I've always been a type looking for trouble that I often like to do, whether it's often been bad or good. It's often more bad than good, but I've always been the one that wants to go forward and see what everybody is reacting to, or want to be the one to help see if we can find a resolution. But in that, when you get that energy happening and you come up on that energy where there's something wild is going on, something dangerous is happening within this huge crowd of people, either a stampede or whatever, there's a festive atmosphere until you get closer to the danger, right? There's an atmosphere that seems like it's festive. People are milling about. There's excitement in the air. And then it turns into a riot or a brawl if you've been in certain clubs back in the day where certain types of music were played, for lack of a better description. But there is a certain excitement in the air before things pop off, either good or bad. And I would imagine that when people come up, those people that have been in that mass psychosis you talked about, the mass sickness to witness something devastating or something just cruel and sick, like a lynching for nowhere or the January 6th insurrection, there's a mentality that all these people have bought into, even the ones that didn't get to the Capitol, but they wanted to march down there. A lot of them that were taking these movies, it was a festive atmosphere for them, wasn't it? They were all festive with it. We're bringing it into the Capitol and da, da, da. It was mob rule. And there was no respect for that institution. The respect that I, as an African-American, was taught to have as a young boy by my father, because that was the process with which black people could get ahead and have some sort of restitution and equality and justice in this country. So the whole thing to follow this country and to pledge allegiance to that, all of that extra stuff that we have to go through. I want to curse, but I'm trying not to. But anyway, let's bring Wayne in there. I know he's got some things. He's just joining us. I know he's got some things to say. Hey, Wayne. We're riffing off of basically the foundation of this discussion initially was the president's address last night, and we're like,
yeah,
on that. So, you know, if you want
well,
to,
I concur thus far with what everyone has said. You know, I mean, what you and Byron have said. You know, I mean, I watched the speech last night. I thought it was a good one. I thought it was meaningful. I know he's got a tough task ahead of him trying to convince some of the people in the opposite side of the aisle, and I was so embarrassed as a African-American, African-Caribbean-American, African, Pan-Africanist to stay on the tube long enough to watch the rebuttal from Tim Scott. And I don't know what planet... I don't get it anymore. I mean, I'm not even trying to be funny or sarcastic about this, but, you know, I've been reading reports from various sources saying that he gets it with the whole George Floyd bill and what progress, you know, he seemingly is making to get members of his party to support, you know, some of the measures to basically reform police. And then he gets up there, and I'm pretty certain it was like the first few words out of his mouth that he feels there is no such thing as racism. And then he went on with his, you know, his rebuttal. And I just said, what a waste of time. What, you know, and it's not because I'm a proud Democrat, you know. It's just that everything that they've, you know, thrown at us in the last 4 years, and we finally have made some progress. I mean, everything that he said could be refuted in terms of our, you know, he is still promoting the agenda of the previous administration, which went nowhere, you know. And it's just bothersome to think that at this stage of the game, this is still going on.
Yeah. I suppose at one time in America, it was necessary to be acquiescent like that. Clearly, at one time in America, if you were a house Negro, you got better treatment than a slave in a field Negro, right? So to acquiesce and to bow down and kowtow, that was a form of survival. And I suppose throughout history, for certain black people in certain areas, maybe because of their minority of numbers or whatever, it still seems to be necessary to take that perspective. And to me, I think that you have to buy into that mentality to be a member of the Republican Party as an African American. I would suppose to rise amongst the ranks where in South Carolina you would be the first black Republican senator, you must have had to really be agreeable in a whole lot of situations. You must have really been that really docile Negro.
That's my point, Eric. I mean, the thing is, where is your self-respect? It's one thing for Lindsey Graham to get on the breeze and talk, oh, there's no such thing, and you know, every other week he's got a different agenda or a different perspective about what goes on, you know, in this country. But this man had an opportunity to shore up the ranks of his own party within the platform that they gave him last night, and I just think it led to more divisiveness. And then he goes on Fox this morning, I understand, I only saw a clip of it, repeating the same thing, you know. And this is why he's been, you know, I'm not espousing that he should be called Uncle Tom or the N-word. But if there's, you know, the fact of the matter is, these are the reasons why. It's clear.
Wayne.
Ray Charles could see it.
Ray Charles can say, Wayne and Eric, check this out. Follow me on the logic, because I'm going to get to the bottom line of it, which I'm not going to blame Tim Scott, because I'm going to blame Tim Scott. But starting off with the premise, America is not a racist country. I'm going to just have to pause there. Okay, for the dramatic effects. Am I in an echo chamber of some kind of bizarre world? I mean, my political commentary is, yeah, bull, you know what. Now think about this. Pine on this. GOP Senator Tim Scott lives in a virtual world of racial unrealness and is in complete and total denial of the obvious that America is a very racist nation and has been since 1619. Where did this clown get his education? Moving forward, his own party, the GOP, is filled with traitorous white supremacists, insurrectionists who tried and failed to take over our government.
Exactly.
Moving further along, visually, it looked like the GOP absolutely played the race card by putting this Rent a Negro from Spooks R Us on the stage to be their spokesperson to rebut President Biden's address to the United, to the Union, to the nation. You know, what a cowardly act by those same Republicans who on January 6th actively aided and abetted in storming our nation's capital and continue to pretend that they had nothing to do with the planning, the execution, the death and destruction that took place. Give me a break. Yes,
I mean,
he was an Uncle Tom Negro.
Yeah, hey Byron, I'm glad you brought that up. You because I noticed that too, right? It was really perfect casting, really perfect scenario to have Tim Scott be the one. How did you guys come to choose? Let me guess how you guys came to choose that Tim Scott, the black senator, should be the one to give the rebuttal now, a couple of days after it was revealed that the cops in North Carolina assassinated, viciously murdered Andrew Brown Jr. a week after the same day when they shot another black guy, a week after Derek Chauvin, the murder of George Floyd, was found guilty for his crimes. How did you come up with that idea to decide to have the only black senator in your party do the response? I wonder how you decided that. And I guess, you know, Tim, hey, it's an opportunity for him, right? To get out there and position himself, I guess, to be the chief lawn jockey. And I wouldn't probably should recall that statement of lawn jockeys, because knowing the real truth of what those lawn jockeys meant, meaning they were watchmen for those that members of the Underground Railroad. So I will not even insult those figures that we always thought were negative, but now we understand that they were symbols. There were watchmen to let someone know that that was an Underground Railroad location. If I'm not mistaken, that's what they actually were in actuality, right, Byron?
Your history is correct.
Yes. So I wouldn't even make Tim Scott one of those individuals, because I don't think he would have been one of the ones helping people get to the Underground Railroad. I think he would have been one of the ones saying, what's wrong, boss? We sick? You know, because apparently when you talk about there's no racism in America, but you experience prejudice and racism as a U.S. senator going to your job, you're kind of making the point, aren't you? You're kind of making your own point that you're trying not to make, right? I mean, if you experience it at the highest levels of our society, what does that tell you?
And another point, and this is just a little bit of an aside of what he discussed last night. He even brought his family into the picture, talking about either his father or his grandfather, who would hold the paper every day and pretend that he was reading and he couldn't read. You know, he gets into this whole familial discussion, you know, like kitchen talk. This is how we grew up. These were the adversity problems that we faced. And look at me now, you know? And I'm just saying, yes, look at you now. You know, where is the self-respect? Where would there be pride? And the fact that you come up with all these canards about what the previous administration did, and I'm sick and tired about their freaking support of the HBCUs. You know, somebody really needs to take a check to that. I mean, it's already been validated, but somebody needs to tell them that, you know, by floating this idea that they're progressive because Trump gave a few dollars, you know, where was he in this prior to his election? Where was the GOP in terms of supporting institutions like that back then? You know? It's just like there's so many different things from that speech last night that you dissect, and that is why, as a Pan-Africanist, as an African-American, as a black man from New York and Brooklyn, everything that I've been schooled and faced in my own lifetime with respect to racism, I just find it appalling that somebody of his stature would get up and give the rebuttal the way he did.
Well, his stature.
We still have so far to go.
I don't know about his stature. I mean, he got a statue from.
He was elected. He holds an elective office. He has a constituency.
Yeah.
He provides services. Who? I don't know.
He's got the constituency.
I need to analyze his district.
I mean, he's got the constituency that a house Negro would have back in the day. That's me speaking.
Exactly.
And also, to me, to turn it around and say, well, the discrimination, what did he say? I'm paraphrasing because as soon as he started talking, I turned it off. I have to admit, I didn't watch his speech because I knew what he was going to say. I knew that he was going to just cow the whole water for the Republican Party. But in some of the clips that I've seen, some of the news programs where I think he was trying to make a case where saying that discrimination, reverse discrimination is not good either, or discriminating against people because they discriminate against people, or whatever kind of madness that argument leads to, whatever kind of bullshit way to structure. Well, just because they discriminate doesn't mean you should discriminate. What are you talking about? This whole kind of, that's what I'm talking about. The house Negroes, all these ass-kissing black people that want to stand up here and act like every single thing that these cycles have done is okay, they need to be done with. And to stand up there and to go through these things, I mean, I met Tim Scott down in D.C. once. Other than hello, that's pretty much all I had to say to him. But I do remember that it was after the President's State of Union, and where all the representatives are waiting, you know, the press is waiting to speak to the representatives and the like. And you're kind of standing there because they had to get on record and say certain things. So Tim Scott comes with his staff person and tries to talk my cousin to letting Tim Scott go ahead of him because he's so important. Tim Scott's got to go someplace. And, you know, you're standing there waiting. So, and the leadership comes by. They want to speak to them first. If you're in line, you got to move back. And Tim Scott and his representative, his person working in his office came and wanted to see if the senator could go first because he had to go someplace, wanted Congressman Payne. Of course, Congressman Payne said no. I don't remember if he said hell no, but I know that he said no. Tim Scott could wait his turn. But the way the issue was with the way the staff person really was trying to, you know, work the angle, so to speak. But and I guess that's indicative, and I don't want to cast judgment on any black people who would work in Tim Scott's office. It's just a job, and maybe he has people that support him. But, yeah, you guys are black members of the Republican Party, and I'm going to call into question your black card, and I'm going to ask you to see if you got an updated one, because anybody who's supporting the actions of this party right now that's trying to bring down and roll back the rights of African Americans to vote, as you can see what they're trying to do in Georgia and all of these other states, any black people that are part of the Republican Party at this point, I think, you know, that you're probably.
Well, if you notice, Tim Scott never mentioned the George Colvin conviction. Conspicuously missing? No.
Mm-mm.
Okay. Now, that's the most significant piece of history in the United States of America, and you're representing your party, and you don't even mention it?
It's an embarrassment.
The most significant historical moment based on the history of racism and slavery and slave catchers and policing in the United States of America, the first time in this in entire history that a police officer, white male, convicted all three charges of murder. Ever.
Yeah.
And you don't even mention that, Tim Scott?
Yeah, no. He's not going to mention it, and none of them are going to mention it. And if you... When you like to watch Fox every once in a while, you're from what I understand, that they were just making stuff up, and Hannity was making stuff up about Joe last night, right? I mean,
yeah.
In
answer to your question, the thing is that I peruse everybody to a certain extent if I'm in a position to do so. But, you know, the problem is that it's almost a perfunctory act on their part to come up with all sorts of excuses and criticism as to what the administration has done. And, you know, I'm proud of a person like Juan Williams, who has had a progressive background working for NPR and places like that. But he was out the other day. He called Fox News on their effort to disparage the Vice President, Kamala Harris, on certain stories that were coming out of Fox. And if I'm not mistaken, a young female journalist from the New York Post resigned because she could no longer take the pressure of what they're putting out. They had asked her to write a disparaging story about the Biden administration with respect to its handling of the Mexican borderline problem and the issues of dealing with the immigrant population, young children coming to this country, but it was going to be spun in such a way to make it look like as if anything that the Biden administration has done has been worse than anything that the previous administration had put forth to help these people. And it was clearly something that was made up. And at least there's some people in that organization who have the conscience to come up and say, you know, I can no longer do this. The young gentleman that used to do the nightly news and resigned and is now working for CNBC, can't think of his name, but is having one of those Prevagen moments. And the deal is that he took a stand. And I understand if you're black and you need a job, and I've been faced with that situation. And thank God I was at a point in my life where I said, you know what, I'm going to step away from this for a minute because I don't like where it was going, and I didn't quite understand the social media. But you got to take a damn stand at some point. I know the bills have to be paid, Juan, but I am glad that you took a moment instead of just being the spook who sat by the door and just go along with the humor that occasionally goes on there to talk about the misinformation that network spews. And this morning, some of the stations, because I didn't tune into Fox because I knew what to expect, but they had a clip of the morning show with Tim Scott there. And just the things that he was talking about just made – it was just a regurgitation of what he had said the night before. And I just find it appalling, you know. And we have a problem in this country. Maybe the Chinese are right that we need an autocracy, you know. Maybe it shouldn't be a situation because as long as we got this back-and-forth business – and there's misinformation being thrown into the mix, this country ain't getting any better. It's going to, you know, get progressively worse. And even the president today was asked the same question by the brother on MSNBC, Craig Melvin. had asked him, do you think this country is racist? And the president said, I think most Americans aren't, but he cited the 400 years of degradation that the African-American community, you know, has gone through. And I, if I'm not mistaken, I think in the clip he also alluded to, you know, why we're going through these problems now with regard to the police and all that. But, you know, I have to give him credit. And he knows where his bread is being buttered. He knows that had it not been for the support of the black community, he probably wouldn't be sitting as president. But he at least acknowledged by saying, I don't want to think that all Americans are that way. But he said,
okay,
there is racism.
74 million Americans are that way. Yes?
Yeah.
Is that a fact?
You know.
Come on now. I just want to make sure I'm clear on who the Republican Party is. 74 million voted for who? So
right.
Is America racist?
Oh,
yes.
Yeah. You know.
Are you a little pregnant or are you just almost pregnant? Or maybe
hey,
you're just
man.
Pregnant.
I hear what you're saying,
and I
concur. You know, I mean, it's sad, man, that we have to go through this.
When, you know, when you're in a room full of criminals, you don't want to mention that, you know, we're doing illegal activities. You know, I mean, you know, that's you don't mention that. That in America is that country, and then everybody didn't want to talk about it. You know, for years they want to talk about it. How dare you mention we're racist, that we treat our slaves in a bad way. Don't tell us how to treat our slaves. Come on. It's bullshit. You know,
I want to know,
guys, whole
I really want to know, when does it become systematic? Because I'm trying to track this as, you know, I'll write a grant. I'm a professional grant writer. Let me just write a grant so that I can determine when did or does racism ever become systemic?
Well, you have to
and
buy
at
the
what
whole country.
Point,
hey,
I
want
to know, just like the guy testifying in the Chauvin, at the moment that Floyd died, I want to know specifically at what moment. Okay, do you follow my logic here? Because I'm like,
yeah.
I'm from the school of Spock.
I see where you're going. Let me just finish this point I was making on that, because I'm sitting here, I've got the TV turned down, but I have the news on, right? And all of those take the country all bought into it. Everybody, America used to be racist. That was the order of the day. Everybody went on about their business and everybody followed that course of living, right? So, and everything supports that course of living. All of our media, all of our newspapers, all of our print, our radio, all of that supports that, right? So every structure within society supports that. And everybody buys into the lie and perpetuates the lie. For example, as I'm watching here, they're talking about, you know, I wanted to save this to the end of the show as something, a high note that we can go out on, or something that at least make us happy, is Giuliani getting the feds raided. But this graphic that is on the TV, on the show that's on MSNBC right now, what they chose to write was New York, America's mayor, the downfall of America's mayor. And I don't believe if 9/11 never happens, Giuliani does not get that reputation, Wayne. And I want you to chime in here, because I know you guys were on the air at that time. I remember my mother being on the air, and she also was giving Giuliani credit the way he handled that situation. Maybe so, but before that, we know that for black people, black and brown people, black people in particular, Rudy Giuliani was not a good mayor. He was law and order, all that stuff. He was not a good stop and frisk. He was not a good mayor for black people. But once again, the media labeled him that. And when 9/11 comes along and he's able to jump on board of that and take control and all that, all of the other truth gets washed away, gets washed over and smoothed over. And nobody really remembers who this guy really was. So he gets to walk around for the next several years after 9/11 acting like America's mayor, and he was the hero, and he could run for president. When everybody, and when you, of all people, Wayne, as a broadcaster, a black broadcaster in the heyday of black radio, know exactly who Rudy Giuliani was. Always, and this, who he is today, that the rest of the country is finding out, is who he has always been. You want them to elaborate on that.
The same thing applies to Trump. You're absolutely right. Two peas in a pod. There's so much alike in many instances, and that's probably why, you know, that they're still friends to this day, because Trump is not into loyalty at all when it comes to friendship. But I will quote the late, great David Dinkins, the former mayor, the mayor who unfortunately was unable to get a second term because of Rudolph Giuliani and his bigotry and racism.
Doing
but,
the same thing he did over the past couple of years, right? He did the same thing to Joe Biden and Obama that he did to Dave Dinkins. Doing the same exact
exactly.
Thing.
And the thing is, Dinkins said Giuliani was doing his job. It's not like he was America's mayor. He was given a task to handle. Had it been anybody else, they were doing their job. There was no need to extend his term beyond, because they, at the point of 9/11, he was in the waning days of his administration. He had no more than maybe three or four months to go. The election occurred in November, and Bloomberg got in. And then there was this back and forth. Well, you know, I really shouldn't leave this position now because I'm America's mayor, and the towers are still falling, and the smoke is still smoldering, and this, that, and the third. And, you know, and I'm just so glad that Bloomberg,
so run
another
that back.
Republican.
Hold on right there. Run that back. So you're saying the election occurred. For people who don't know, because we're, you know, we're on the Internet, so people all over the world can listen to this, so they might not be familiar with the history that you are. So tell the story.
Yeah, coming towards the end of the Giuliani administration, this is his second four-year term as mayor. In 9/11, September 11th, I remember that morning clearly. You know, we had the bombing, and you know, it was on his watch. The president, George W. Bush, came to town. Giuliani, you know, did the normal protocol as the city's chief executive to take all the dignitaries around to show what was going on. He was involved with the military and all that, but he wanted to heap on the glory of having, you know, the executive orders to give to the police department, possibly the National Guard, and show, like in a moment of crisis, that he was the one who single-handedly saved the city,
okay,
which is
stop
a lot
right
of
there.
Garbage.
Stop right.
But
when
that
did
was
happen?
The promotion.
So does 9/11 happen? What year is it? The last year of his mayoralship? What is it? What?
Yeah, very in the waning days of his administration. He
so the election
he was a lame duck mayor.
Okay, so Bloomberg is already elected. 9/11 happens. Rudy is a lame duck mayor, and because during those couple of weeks that stuff went down
in September, he wanted to extend his term in 2012. And, I'm saying 2012, it should be 2001 it occurred. And so he wanted to extend his term to at least go a few more months as mayor. And, you know, so Bloomberg said, well, there's nothing more that you could do that I wouldn't do as somebody, you know, you should be preparing. Your staff should be like what Trump should have done. For Biden, there should be a transitional team involved, but Giuliani didn't want to give up the glory.
So here's. Let me just stop you right here before you go, because I want people to really realize what we're talking about and get the full ramifications. 9/11 happens once again. 9/11, September 11th, 2001, it occurs.
Yeah.
The tragedy, the devastation, all that occurs. Giuliani is in his lame duck session when this occurs. The new mayor is set to take over the reins in January of 2002, right?
Exactly.
So September, October, November, December, that's another 3 months he has to be mayor and to reap the glory of being there. But he wanted to. That wasn't going to be good enough for him, right? He wanted to take it into the following year, even more months. So the 3 months towards the end of his term going out like a champion and going out looking good wasn't good enough for him. I just want to really point that out because that shows us truly who this guy was, and it's good to understand the history and the context of what really happened. 9/11 occurs at the end of Rudy Giuliani's term when he's a lame duck. He does the due diligence of being a mayor during a catastrophe and what you're supposed to do as a mayor in that situation, as much as you can do, being dealt with a situation that never occurred, but still you're performing your duties as mayor. There's no excuse or reason for you 3 months later. 9/11 happened in the beginning of September, 9/11, September 11th. So that was the first 2 weeks of September. So what, 3 months and 3 weeks later, almost 4 months later, and he still wanted to maintain a position of power, clearly for no other reason than how it made him look. Right?
And that's what it's been about with him. Everything is about show and tell. You know, and if people don't really take the time to research this man's political background, you know, when he was head of the Southern District, you know, there's even, because his son, I'm just so amazed when I see him on TV now, how he promotes how his father single-handedly handled the mob, the mafia. I mean, I even question what he was doing then now because it's always been about an agenda. Here's a guy that announced that he was leaving his wife at a news conference. The woman that he was married to, his son's mother,
yes.
You know, just one day during the course of a news conference, oh, by the way, I'm leaving the First Lady of the City of New York. She didn't even know that she was about to be handed divorce papers. Everything was a spectacle with Giuliani, you know?
Yeah.
He staged a racist police disturbance, an insurrection in many ways, before Dinkins, in the first term of Dinkins' administration, in the early term, I should say, the first few months of his administration, down at City Hall, because he was unhappy and he wanted to embarrass, you know, the mayor, the former mayor, the first black mayor, and I'd like to think that there'll be others after this, but I don't know. But
so
That
was in the first couple of months. That was in the first couple of months of Dave Dinkins' mayorship,
exactly.
Right? So he really didn't have a chance to hit the ground. He really didn't have a chance. Giuliani. Well, let's all remember, so people who it was a long time ago, we want to refresh people's memory, that Giuliani used to be a Democrat, runs for mayor of New York. Dave Dinkins beats him. He leaves the Democratic Party. That's when he became a Republican. So everybody knows. You know, over the last about a month, I've come to realize how important it is that we set the record straight and tell the true story. Not history, Byron. Because history is somebody else's story. I think we should change the name to Truth Story, right? Because everybody's got a version of history. You know, three versions, what your version, the other person's version, what really happens, that's the story. Right. We should make it about Truth Story. Because, like I said, not only if we know what's happening in politics in the United States and all that, my personal life, I've noticed how certain individuals either have conveniently forgotten, realistically forgotten, or have just tried to change the narrative of history, what happened. And Wayne, I'm sure you know it as well. You've experienced that as well, how people try to change the narrative of what really happened. So I think we should change the word from history to Truth Story.
To Truth Story.
You know, because
that is happening that is validating the commentary of truth that is crushed to earth shall rise again, is that the element of the video, police cam, their own camera, is bringing forth the rationale that was proven it was necessary. Remember, we went through this moment not too long ago where the police forces all across the country were, no, we cannot have a camera. But look what the camera is doing.
Exactly.
And it's providing the truth. You see, you have to have, you're right, you have to have Truth Story And it's true story that is setting the statement right now. As long as this tape is not released in the Brown, Andrew Brown car assassination, bullet behind the ear, back of the head, whatever, come on. Even if he was trying to run over an officer, really? Was this a ticket violation or were y'all just serving a warrant? Because last time I recall, it's not necessary to be violent just to serve a warrant. You're just supposed to, marshal comes up, shows up, bada bing, bada boom. No, your intentions were provocative from the very beginning.
Yeah, their intentions were to kill him.
Yes.
And I think that's I'm glad you brought that up, Byron, because I tell you, I mean, and you've been on this ball of dirt as long as I have, and there's been such a transition since the advent of social media and the fact that we are all walking around with these cell phones that actually take pictures. And I have to admit, I don't even want to attribute it to West Indian values and just being cheap and poor and stuff like that. I wouldn't want to disrespect my heritage that way. But I've come out of the dark ages. Through a friend of mine, embarrassed me to the point where I put some money down on an iPhone. I am fascinated by the things that people could take pictures of. And I just think that this is a time, you know, that is so important for us to at least memorialize incidents like what poor George Floyd went through, what Dwayne Wright went through. I mean, it is just so important that I never thought, you know, because I dealt with radio for many years, never had a thought of going on TV. And those of you who've seen me know why. But the bottom line is, I really see the impact.
You got a face for radio.
That's all I can say.
That's one of your guys' jokes.
You know, I'm admitting to that, you know, but, you know, it just, I'm fascinated by
don't
what the
believe
camera,
it, ladies.
And
Wayne Gilman
I
is a
you.
Matching as a dashing man.
Well,
he's a
thank you,
man,
but,
please. And I'm not,
you know,
gay.
That was my past, you know, but the thing is, I know you and Byron have both been, you know, in front of the camera for a long time, but it is just fascinating, you know, what they've been able to come back with. And no incident, you know, as volatile as the ones that we've mentioned, and even since George Floyd's death, you know, that they all are memorialized, that we could look back and that, you know, we could pick a jury that's going to give, we'd like to think, that's going to be honest and see what goes on. You know, I mean, it's sad that it's taken all this time.
It really is. But, you know, the optics of change, because we got 5 minutes left. We should end the show on a high note. And I want to just say something about what happened in Washington yesterday that brought me to an emotional high. In my 71 years, I never, ever anticipated or ever believed I would ever see a black president. Never let alone to see Madam Vice President. Think of this concept. Norman Rockwell's Ruby Bridges going to school for the first time and then having a Madam Vice President, African-American, Asian-American, walking in the halls as a descendant of Ruby Bridges' notion of no fear. Woman is here. Yesterday's optics of Madam Vice President, Speaker of the House, and the President, if you don't know nothing else, Tim Scott, look up your history, black man.
That's right. There it
is. Even that he couldn't even comment on, you know?
He didn't even make a comment on that.
And that was historical.
Yeah, he you know, what are you going to do? But that was certainly the highlight, looking up there and seeing, obviously, the two women, Madam Vice President, Madam Speaker, you know? So, you know, that was definitely a historic moment. You brothers, Wayne, you want to give the last, let the people know we've got 3 minutes to go?
Hey, I just want to say keep hope alive. You know, I hope things, you know, get better. I mean, we've had highs and lows in the last couple of weeks. And I think last night's speech by the president was a high note. And I concur, it was a historical moment. Keep hope alive.
There you go. There it is.
All right.
The parting words from Brother Wayne Gilman. We'll talk to you again on the next episode, my brother. Talk to you
Thank
again.
Thank you.
Byron.
All right.
You want to give
yes, sir. Peace and love always. Yes, and remember, my people, that moment yesterday is etched in the American stone of history. And it's a great history. We saw with your very own eyes and believed in the power of your vote. That's how that happened. Peace and love always.
There it is. Byron Saunders. Brother Byron, we'll talk to you again in the next episode. This is Kay's Son and Friends, and we did it live this evening on the Thursday evening because, you know, we like to mix it up. Plus, you know, we wanted to – everybody needs to be aware and watch all of these things as much as you can. You know, you don't need to do the 24-hour news thing because that's going to drive you crazy. But what you do need to do is pay attention. Pay attention to the facts, opinions so much. You know, some people will help you break down the opinions so you can understand a little bit better, but, you know, try to be aware of when somebody's editorializing and giving their own perspective about things. Be open to learning what you can learn. I'm Citizen Payne. This is Kay's Son and Friends. It's Chuck D in the background. Another version of Welcome to the Terror Dome. Sometimes it feels like that, huh? Struggle continues. My mom's upstairs in heaven on assignment with the rest of the family. We'll talk to you again.